A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rehm, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on May 5, 1993, entitled Family Values, Jesus Style. The texts for the sermon are Mark 3, verse 33, and John 21, verses 16 through 17. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
The family is an endangered species. We hear about it all over the place. Whatever has happened to the family? This statement, for example, much of the very mechanism of our modern life is destructive of the family. National Congregational Council Report, 1892. They were saying it 100 years ago, and they're saying it today, and there are prophets of doom all over the place who are telling us that society is unraveling, social relationships are full of brokenness and pain, and the family cannot possibly endure the pressure. Actually, we are being barraged with bad news about the family. And in his book, Culture Wars, James Davison Hunter says that in those social issues that are tearing the fabric of American society apart, the family is the very central focus. The things that center around the politicization and the debate about the family are at the very center of all of those issues that seem to be at the core of what is causing so much ferment and so much disruption in the social order. But like this congregational report said, the very mechanism of modern life is destructive of the family 100 years ago. And so in our day, there are incredible pressures and forces at work creating new situations daily and with every passing decade. And the pressures on the family are not to be gainsaid. Nonetheless, I want to bring to you this morning a message of hope about my conviction for the potential that lies before us for creating in our day a more humane world and a greater sense of community which accords dignity and worth to every individual. All of the ruckus in our day about the destruction of the family is coming largely from the religious right. Now, I don't like labels. I don't know how to label this group, and I know it's too easy to lump people into a category, to label it, and to do away with them. But I don't know how else to speak to you this morning plainly without saying some things rather clearly that will help you to get the context of my comments. We live in a day when, again, I have to use the word conservative. I'm a conservative. Every enlightened and educated person needs to have a conservative strain to him or her, because a conservative is one who would preserve the best values of the past. So I don't like to give up the word conservative. But we have in the Christian movement, in the Christian church today, a very vocal and a very militant right wing. Sometimes we speak of fundamentalists. The approach to Scripture is literal, and morality is very tight, reflecting a pattern of long ago. Family values becomes a code word for these people who have a very definite idea of what The family ought to be as ordained by God. But as James Hunter Davison says in his book, Culture Wars, what is at stake is a certain idealized form of the 19th century middle-class family, a male-dominated nuclear family, that both sentimentalized childhood and motherhood, and at the same time celebrated domestic life as a utopian retreat from the harsh realities of industrial society. What the religious right is focused on is a model of the 19th century, certainly that has continued into this century, but which is in itself a relatively new, 250 years or so old, view of a traditional family. And in the culture wars phenomena of our day, we have a great polarization in society, a polarization of those who are calling for new forms and shapes of human community, and those who would go back to the so-called traditional or nuclear family. Researchers tell us today that in that conception of the traditional family, where the father goes to work and there is a male-dominated home, and the mother stays home and cares for the children, and children experience the nurture of two parents, that is the experience of 4 to 7% of our population. And so what we have today is a great cry and hand-wringing about the unraveling and the disintegration of the family and the fabric of society. I want to say to you that I think a lot of the fear that sometimes borders on hysteria is a consequence of the excessive media saturation that we have, much of which is very right-wing, and in the case of television, Christian broadcasting. I don't spend much time with TV, and I spend even less on Christian broadcasting. Some of you may be offended by this, because perhaps you while away the hours being blessed all over the place, but I got to tell you, I think that much of this, the appeal of these TV personalities, draws dollars and fives and tens out of sincere, humble, and relatively poor people who are concerned about these issues, and they are, on the other hand, supported by the thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars of some of the wealthy who would support them in order to reinforce the status quo of a day gone by. I don't think this world is being made more humane through the efforts of Christian television. I think Christian broadcasting networks or Trinity broadcasting or whatever you want to call it, whatever you want to watch, is a source of divisiveness in society. I think that it creates hostility. It works on people's negative emotions. It creates fear in the human heart, leading to despair, and is one of the great agents in the culture wars that politicizes society and creates much of the tension that we have in our society today. Amen. Now, thank you. I was delighted when I got to New York last week at my perspectives meeting to find that the May issue, which I hadn't received yet in the mail, has an opening article by David Myers, very respected psychologist, social psychologist at Hope College, who was here a few weeks ago talking about his book, The Pursuit of Happiness. David Myers' lead article is Let's Focus on the Family. Now, you probably catch that code word, focus on the family, which is the program of James Dobson. Some years ago, we showed a series of films by James Dobson here on Sunday evenings. They were very good. Had a lot of good stuff in them. But what's happened to the whole focus on the family movement, the Dobson movement, is it has become, I think, a movement that has broadened out beyond the family to the whole cultural war agenda. Homosexuality, the abortion issue. I could give you the statistics here from David Myers to show that what has happened with focus on the family is that it is no longer a focus on the family. And Myers is pleading with the right and the left. Now that the election is over, to begin to focus on the family, because while I think that the hysteria and the hand-wringing is all out of proportion, there is no doubt that the family is critical to the well-being of society, and the family needs our deep concern and our deep commitment. David Myers says in this article, for example, these troubling facts. Child abuse reports have soared from well under 1 million cases annually to nearly 3 million. The divorce rate is doubled. The happiness in surviving marriages has slightly declined. Teen sexual activity is doubled with accompanying increases in sexually transmitted diseases. The 5% of babies born to unwed mothers in 1960 has quintupled to more than 27%. Increasingly, everywhere in America, children are having children. In 1960, 1 in 10 children did not live with 2 parents. Today, nearly 3 in 10 do not. Now, that's just a collage by David Myers, and we could get other statistics and other dimensions of this from many sources. So don't hear me this morning saying that there is not a concern for the well-being of the family. Don't hear me saying that we do not need to redouble our efforts to the nurture of the family and the support of the family institution. All of that is true. But I want to say to you, as a Christian community, that there is a kind of hysterical, frenzied, hand-wringing cry full of despair and hopelessness, which I think is like an acid undercutting the morale of the body politic, the social structure, rather than bringing to it the kind of positive nurture and insight that we as the family of God experience together and need to share with our world. There is such a division and such a polarization in our society today, fueled by intensive media saturation, so that I think people fail to gain a historical perspective and sometimes lose their civility and their decency and lose also then the creative, positive power to make a difference and to affect human transformation. The kind of human transformation that's going on at Griffith School with a circle of friends, where children are learning how to care for one another. No, dear friends, the family isn't going to fail. People are going to learn to live in every new social situation in covenant and in faithfulness. People are going to continue to find ways to live in marriages, to raise and to nurture children, and to build human community. But in a book I picked up this week, Whatever Happened to the Family, there is a discussion of 1930 to 1990, only 60 years. But in that survey of those 60 years, when you see that, it is amazing that there are any of us that are still normal, and sometimes I question us as well. Think about it, 1930 to 1990, the Great Depression, into the 40s with the Second World War and world convolution, into the 50s with the kind of euphoria following the war and that era of peace and well-being that was also an era of permissiveness and a failure of parenting in many respects. The eruption of the 60s, the whole civil rights movement, moving into the narcissism, the me generation of the 70s, into the 80s, and to the present. We have not only fewer traditional families and nuclear families, we have blended families, and we have perpetual families. We have all kinds of new arrangements, new forms of family and community, and it is not surprising when you think about the tremendous ferment in the world in the last half century. The form of the family will change. The form of the family has always changed. There is no static period in human history. Every time there was a social eruption, and in the meantime, there has always been social evolution so that new forms have evolved and people have simply learned to live in new arrangements. Sometimes it's been good, sometimes not so good. The pendulum swings back and forth. But don't believe anybody that tells you that this is the worst of all possible times. There are also wonderful signs of new possibility in our day. We have the possibility in our world today, with changing forms so obvious, of using our creativity to build a more humane world. Goodness sakes, aren't we aware? Isn't it impossible not to be aware in our world today of so many things that were hidden to our forebears? Don't we know today that we are called upon to treat every person with dignity and with respect? Don't we know today that that 19th century nuclear family that was male dominated was oppressive to women even when women didn't know they were being oppressed? Don't we know today that the whole issue of abortion is about human rights? Don't we know today that sexism is as blatant a sin as racism, which continues even into our day? Don't we know today that sexual orientation is not a choice and a preference, but a given, and that such people need to be accorded human dignity and worth? Don't we know today that the possibility for human relationship and human community is as multiple as there are types of people? Is not the diversity of the human family an indication of a God who loves diversity and loves with prodigality? Don't we know today that we could be on the threshold of a world that may be unraveling in order that it may be woven into a more beautiful pattern? I have a friend who loves to say it is necessary to let things chaoticize. We don't like things to chaoticize. We want things orderly and predictable and manageable. But as a matter of fact, it is in the chaotization of those structures and forms that create the openings and where the new light can come through, where we can find new arrangements and new possibilities, where we are people of goodwill who will treat one another with dignity and with value. That is the possibility. The forms will change because they will give way to the accelerating pressures of our contemporary world. But you can't go home, friends. You can never turn the clock back. And the Christian family has no right to wring its hands in despair and sit down in hopelessness and weep. It is for us to model out a new community, because while the form of the family changes, the function of the family remains the same. It is the function of the family to create the space for human connectedness, where we learn to love and where we are loved, where we are cared for and we learn to care, where we see modeled out compassion and become compassionate. The one place in this world where love is unconditional, enabling us to be released to love unconditionally in turn. The form of the family will change. Let it go. The function of the family will always be the same. The creation of human connectedness, where I know I belong, where I know I'm loved, where I know I'm accepted just because I am, where I am cared for, and where I in turn learn to love, to care, to mend, and to heal, to do unto others as has been done to me in the community, the form of the family that is mine, but beyond the biological family, the family of God. This is the extended family. It was in the 50s, with all of our prosperity and our economic acceleration and the growth of corporations and the moving of people all over the country in that time of prosperity, that we lost the extended family. And again, you never go home. But we have the possibility in the church to be family to one another, to experience community here, to know our connectedness, to be cared for and to care, to feel the compassionate love and support of another, and to compassionately love and support. I don't think Jesus probably ever celebrated Mother's Day. You know, mothers are wonderful. And Jesus had a Jewish mother, which is really special, I guess. And there was a day when he got out on a limb somewhere, and they said to Mary, "Have you read the newspaper report?" And she said, "Don't tell me." But she said to Jesus' brothers, "Let's go get him. Let's bring him home." Doesn't every mother want her son or her daughter to be decent somewhere down the middle, not too far to the right or to the left? I know that as long as my mother was alive, I stayed pretty close to the middle. I mean, it's just a matter of respect, you know. But Jesus was out there turning the world upside down. And Mary came to where he was preaching, and she couldn't even get in and penetrate the crowd. And so she sent him a message: "Dear son, I've come for you, your mother." Not, "Hi, son, this is Mom." This was your mother. It must have been hard for her to receive a note back, "Dear Mother." Who is my mother? Who is my sister? Who is my brother? Those who do the will of God, those are family to me. Not in any way to denigrate the ties that are biological. But in the Christian community, we know of ties that bind us more firmly with a greater bonding. The ties of the family of God, those who do the will of God, those who love and seek to create a loving community. I think that's family value, Jesus style. Because what God is about, dear friends, is to make better lovers of us all. Thank God.